In this process, you will have some really clear, dedicated opportunities for that coming up in the next couple of months.
And just quickly, speaking of the drama that I mentioned earlier, on April 13th at 6:30, they are going to meet with Commissioner Gonzalez, who I mentioned earlier is a bit of a question mark on this.
Ah, yes, because he wasn't a commissioner when they did their first.
Indeed.
Interesting.
Yeah, so they will be, having a meeting with him where he can ask questions and they can ask questions of him, and that will probably get very interesting. And again, that's April 13th.
Popcorn time.
Yes. Well,
with that,
thank you so much for listening to Totality of Circumstances for March 2023. You can catch us again in April on the 25th of April, the fourth Tuesday of the month at 5:30, right after the cable evening news. I'm Sam.
And I'm Jasmine.
Good night, everybody.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
Connect with your favorite community radio station on social media.
Our Facebook page is facebook.com/kboomradio.
And follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/kboo.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/kboo radio.
We also provide content to the free music archive.
An interactive library of high quality legal audio downloads.
That's at freemusicarchive.org/curator/kboo.
You can find all of this and more on the KBOO website, kboo.fm.
Thanks for listening.
Did you know that KBOO is streaming live on the web? Well, you do now. Just type www.kboo.fm, click on Listen Live, and you've got us. Just another example of how KBOO 90.7 FM Portland works for you. It's your community radio.
Hi, this is Judy Collins, and you're listening to KBOO in Portland.
There's something missing and I'm lit and I got something to say. Oh yeah. All of the witches and the demons better get out my way.
Good evening. You're listening to Trans Positive here on KBOO Community Radio. My name is Emma, and I use she and her pronouns. And let's all go around and introduce each other and talk about how we're doing. Would you like to start, Nicolette?
Sure. My name is Nicolette. I use they, them, AM, or faith care pronouns. And I'm having a good evening. I am very excited to celebrate Trans Day of Visibility.
Thanks. And Sheila, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, I am Sheila. I go by she and her pronouns, and I'm doing well, and I have been reading some very interesting books today about identity, culture, and the new world that we're living in.
Great. And we have a special guest tonight. She's actually a regular member of our collective, but she's also kind of our featured guest tonight for Transgender Day of Visibility, and that's Gigi Castle. Gigi, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi. I'm Gigi. Thank you very much for the kind words. I appreciate that, and thank you so much for allowing me to be on here tonight. My pronouns are she and her. That's what that is, and I am just so excited to be here tonight with everybody.
Great. And tonight we are celebrating Transgender Day of Visibility, which is March 31st. It's a day that was started by Rachel Crandall Crocker, and we've had Rachel on the show several times talking about why she started Trans Day of Visibility and what a big thing it's become. Now it's pretty much as visible in the trans and queer community as Trans Day of Remembrance is. And it's a day to celebrate transgender people. So mark your calendars. March 31st, which is coming up in just a couple of days, is Transgender Day of Visibility. And tonight we're going to be talking, first we're going to be acknowledging and honoring Darcelle, who, although she was not transgender, was definitely an important figure in our community. And we're going to share a little bit of a story about Darcelle to just acknowledge her passing this last week here in Portland. Portland's longest running drag queen. And then we're going to be talking a little bit about Transgender Day Visibility. And then we're going to really go into talking with Gigi tonight. Gigi's going to be sharing with us her experiences going to San Francisco and taking a tour of the transgender district in San Francisco. Which San Francisco has its own transgender district, and also her visits to City Hall, in which she learned about San Francisco's transgender history. So we're really excited to learn about that. So welcome, everyone. Let's start. Nicolette, why don't we start by talking about Darcelle? Can you share with us a little bit of news about Darcelle and her passing?
Yeah, so Darcelle was in the Guinness Book of World Records for the oldest performing drag queen. She just passed away at 92 years old, and she was from here in Portland. I believe she also started an LGBTQ nightclub. So from this article I'm reading, Walter W. Cole Sr., who is better known as Portland's legendary drag queen, Darcelle the 15th, died Thursday, March 23rd, 2023. He was 92. Cole's death was first reported Thursday evening on the Facebook page for his nightclub, Darcelle the 15th Showplace. For more than 50 years, Cole entertained generations of tourists and bachelorette parties at his Old Town nightclub, where the entertainer told body jokes in elaborate makeup and beaded gowns, while acting as master of ceremonies to a parade of other drag queens and dancers. As Darcelle, Cole became an unofficial ambassador of goodwill for the city, supporting a variety of charities over the decades, appearing in numerous Rose Festival and Pride parades, and receiving the Spirit of Portland Award from the city's mayor. In 2016, Cole was recognized by the Guinness World Records as the world's oldest drag queen performer.
Great, thank you. And can you acknowledge the source of that article, Nicolette?
Yeah, sorry. This is from Oregon Live.
Oh, great. Okay, thank you so much. Yeah, Darcelle was, I don't know who's had a chance here to go see Darcelle perform, but, you know, she was really the Portland drag institution. I mean, she was world famous, and we've had several opportunities to interview her on the show. We didn't take those. I'm really sorry to say that we didn't have a chance to get around to those. There's so many people to talk to here in Portland. But we definitely honored Darcelle. We honor what she stood for, especially at a time when transgender and drag culture is under attack. You know, I mean, there's a little bit of... there's a little bit of discomfort in the relationship between trans women and drag queens because, but it's not really conflict. It's just they come from two different kinds of cultural approaches. I mean, transgender is a very specific kind of gender identity issue, and drag is something that has to do with sexual orientation and that legacy aspect of queer culture that has to do with sexual orientation. And they're both like really important parts of the broader spectrum of queer identity. And so, you know, we really honor Darcelle. Darcelle was an incredible ally and really stood for like this amazing pride in his queerness, in their, place here in Portland and worldwide, you know, the kind of message that they brought about acceptance of LGBTQ people as an ambassador for the queer community. And also, you know, honestly, I mean, helping to keep alive a very ancient tradition in our culture of, you know, of drag. I mean, and providing places for people to make a living doing that. And, you know, drag is something that we honor, at least I do. But do you want to talk about drag a little bit, Sheila? Because I know that you have a little bit to say about drag culture, too.
Yeah, I think when a lot of us are coming out in the beginning, we're all looking for a community and people that can kind of share whatever our experiences are. And the town that I grew up in, there wasn't a whole lot of trans visibility. And insofar as there was much in Seattle, it was done in a kind of a clinical support group setting. And that wasn't what I was looking for. What I was looking for was community and something that was vital and a little edgy, a little in your face. And I enjoyed the rebellious energy that started at Stonewall and was present in the drag queens there, you know, like Sylvia Rivera and Marsha P. Johnson. And I was also, the way I always approach things is kind of a historical and cultural perspective. And so I found that in the what was called the court system, which is the different regions of the country are geographically defined around the various sort of like medieval courts. That's what they mean by that. And so you have a king and a queen, and it was, yet they're always there to do charity work and raise, for instance, money for during the AIDS epidemic. They were very, very useful for that. And there's definitely an overlap. A lot of drag performers do have a profound transgender component, and it goes a lot deeper than just performances. And then for others, it's just, you know, performance period, and then glad to be done with that kind of attitude. But there's no like warfare between us. And certainly when people come after us, they come after us in the same modality, whether we're full-time people or part-time people. I was a little more distant from the TV, which was means the transvestite community, because I appreciated that many of them were very heavily invested in straight society. And because they were, they had to be a little bit more closeted. Their coming out was usually confined to special events. And I was younger then too. And so my attitude was, if you can't do it on the street and you can't bear the brunt, then you're kind of, you know, you're kind of trying to keep a foot in both camps. But I got a little bit too edgy maybe in that, because everybody has to do what they have to do. And they're only the individual person knows what is safe for them to do. And there's no way that anybody outside of that can necessarily judge them for that. Everybody kind of has to carry their own load, and they have to have their own risk potential there. And everybody sort of knows what they're up to. And it's an evolving process. The coming out experience is not like it's like, bam, and all of a sudden you're there. There's definitely a kind of a growing into this. So it's not learned overnight. Everybody has to mature in the role. And one thing that drag culture gives people, and you can see that a lot in some of the portrayals, is that they are parts of literally families. And there's a drag mom that kind of, you know, takes her daughters in tow and, you know, tells her how to stay out of trouble and tells her how to look pretty. And I've always been really kind of proud of that institutional aspect to it. And it's something that's distinctive to gay culture, and therefore to some extent also to transgender culture.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks everyone for sharing your thoughts about
Darcelle. Can I say one more thing about Darcelle?
Please.
One more thing about Darcelle. I was actually in, it wasn't called Old Town then, it was really kind of the scary part of Portland. And I was doing work at an alcohol rehabilitation center, and Darcelle's was just down the street. And I had not totally come out yet. I was scared to almost walk past Darcelle's for fear. I could just feel the magnetic attraction. I said, oh my God, if I get into this, there'll be no end to it. And it was just comforting to know that it was there. And it looked so kind of glam. It had stars and had pictures of the performers outside. But in those days, to be out on the street, I mean, we lived down there when we were doing work at the Alcohol Treatment Center. And after dark, I mean, it was really kind of a wild thing. You really felt that you were kind of off the grid. And so it took a lot of bravery to start a bar in a position like that. And I just think that, you know, later on when things become gentrified, they become much more kind of surrounded by a certain aura of automatic acceptance. But in those days, that was pioneering. That was huge for Portland. And so I'm proud of Portland that not only was Darcelle's apparent, I don't know if they were ever like hassled by, you know, in those days it was not uncommon for even police to hassle in different towns in America. That's what Stonewall was all about, is that if you opened a bar, you had to, you know, you had to almost pay for protection. So, and the irony is that now we're kind of going through a somewhat similar period where they're kind of trying to drive us right back into exactly that modality of existence.
Thank you. So before we get to Gigi, I do want to just make a short announcement. I got a note from Mickey Gillette, who we've had on the show before, and Nikki Gillette was just letting us know that there's a new play that Nikki is opening with Fuse Theater Ensemble, and it starts on April 6th, and it's called American Girl, and it's based on the story of Nikki Kuhnhausen, a trans teen who was killed in a hate crime in Vancouver, Washington in 2019, and researched it by conducting extensive interviews with Nikki's family and friends. We've had advocates for Nikki Kuhnhausen on the show before, and I believe we also had Nikki Kuhnhausen's mother on too. But anyways, this is a play that's based on her life. It's written by Mickey Gillette, the playwright who's also done My Perfectly Valid Objections, and a couple of other plays that we've had her on the show about. So again, that's going to be playing at Fuse Theater Ensemble. It starts on April 6th and it runs through April 30th. Tickets are pay what you will, and you can go to Fuse Theater Ensemble /American-Girl if you'd like to know more about that. So there's also an article that Mickey was featured in American Theater, and you can find that also. It's about the play that she's working on, American Girls. So congratulations, Mickey, and good luck, and we encourage you to go see her new play. So Gigi, welcome to Transpositive. We're going to talk with you now for a while and kind of learn a little bit more about your trip down to San Francisco to the transgender district in San Francisco.
Oh, I'm excited to share.
Yeah, can you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, first of all, let me also send my deepest respect to Darcelle. I know she wasn't trans, I think. She was a drag performer, but in the current political climate we're in, you know, drag performers are being attacked just as badly as transgender people are, and I cannot allow that. I can't stand there and let that happen without speaking out against it. And Darcelle was one of our strongest, activists, like was said, in the 60s, in the 70s, when it was even more difficult. But I had performed once at Darcelle's when I was with the Clinton Street Cabaret, but you know, that goes back into drag performance. I did drag initially when I first transitioned because it was the easiest way for me to express my gender identity in a safe space, you know. And as I transitioned, a lot of drag performers who may not identify as trans were my biggest supporters and still are. And Darcelle, you know, was a legend. And I did meet her twice, and she was always very, very sweet with me, and I always appreciated that approach. So you know, my respects for Darcelle because she was one of the greats. Getting to San Francisco, you know, I had I went to San Francisco partially because I wanted to relax, but also because I wanted to see the transgender district like we were talking about, like you were mentioning earlier. And I mean, it was really, you know, I mean, you would think it's an average neighborhood just by walking by it if you didn't understand it. It was founded in 20, if I'm reading this correctly, because I want to make sure that I'm always on top of things. It was founded by three trans women of color, after the district itself had been the Compton Cafeteria Riot of 1966, which involved a lot of trans people, and this predated Stonewall. And it's in the east southeastern Tenderloin of San Francisco. And now the Tenderloin district has had its rough time of things, like, you know, a lot of places in a lot of cities in this country because of, you know, the pandemic and the economic collapse. But what they did is before they allowed it to be gentrified, they went to City Hall. It was three women, Honey Mahogany, Janetta Johnson, and I pray I'm pronouncing the first and last name correctly. It's no disrespect. Aria Saeed, and Saeed serves as the executive director. Now I'm reading this from Wikipedia, because I tried getting a hold of them and hadn't had any luck. And that's understandable. They've got a lot of stuff going on. That's understandable. I'm not upset. I was just proud to be in that district because. And then I went to San Francisco City Hall after I was in the district for a while, and I was talking to Supervisor Aides. I wanted to talk to the supervisors, but I got a chance to talk to the aides, and I was so impressed how the city worked with these three trans women to develop this district and not allow it to be gentrified and make it a transgender district, which is, as far as I know, there are none. There are no other transgender districts in the world except for this tiny part of San Francisco, which is great. And it was so inspiring being there. It was inspiring in general being in San Francisco because here I am, a trans woman, and I feel safe. I'm walking through any part of the town and city, and everybody is just kind and supportive of me. And I'm walking through these neighborhoods, and I feel, you know, I feel like a majority there. And I felt safe in the transgender district. I felt safe at City Hall. I felt safe walking on the beach, and it was wonderful. I mean, I saw what can really happen when there is that grassroots drive to not allow the economics of our current situation to take away these neighborhoods which have so much of our history in them. And I see Portland and I see what can be. I saw San Francisco and I saw what can be. And I was thinking about my mom, who's not here with me anymore. I was thinking about the people who have mattered to me. And I was thinking about the city, and I was thinking about my experience, and I just stood there crying. And I'm not somebody who cries very openly in public, but I was just crying because I saw what was so good and what could be here. Even though we faced hard times, I know we can get there. And I am so sorry, I'm going on and on, but this is just, I still to this moment feel passionately what I experienced there a few weeks ago.
Well, that's so great. Yeah, can you tell, I mean, for people who don't know, I've been to the transgender district before. It's very nice.
Yeah.
Can you describe what the transgender district is like? Like, what are some of the most visible things that you see when you go to the transgender district?
Well, first of all, let me tell you, walking by there, I saw so many trans flags on so many street corners, on street poles, on plaques, signs, everything showing that it's a trans owned run and live district. A lot of the people that live there are trans. A lot of people that own companies and businesses and small stores there are trans. And it's just a place for us to, it's just a place for us to be us and be safe and support each other. And that's what I saw. And I mean, this has been going on since 2017. This was, the cultural district was established. And like I said, I'm reading off of Wikipedia because I want to make sure I get everything correct just from what I'm having to read on top of what I saw. You know, it was founded via ordinance by the San Francisco Board of Supervisors in 2017. And in 2019, in July, the board allocated $300,000 in seed money to support the district. And district projects have been planned for 2020, and they've included coffee shops and, you know, and like I said, I'm just reading from what I've seen, but it offers job training for local trans people of color, which is even more important because trans people of color are even at higher risk than just the trans community in general. The trans community, you know, is always at high risk of not being able to keep work because of prejudiced individuals. But you know, this district was so, I saw so many good things in this district, and I saw people, you know, the sister, you know, taking this neighborhood and keeping it from being gentrified by turning it into a trans district. And I hope I'm not going on.
No, you're doing great, Gigi. Please go on.
I wish I'd been able to talk to the founders. But, you know, it was okay. I understood that, you know, they're busy keeping, there's a whole group of members, you know, that really work to build that district up. And I was just impressed. I mean, I've seen individual buildings, you know, that have trans programs, but this is a whole neighborhood. I thought, wow, that is so cool.
Talk about transgender visibility. That's about as visible as you can get, putting trans flags on every building, painting trans colors on all the light poles.
Oh my God. And I was just standing there and I'm looking at there and I feel like I'm in some kind of movie where I'm kind of in a circular motion and I'm seeing all these things. I'm thinking to myself, this is what it could be like. This is what it can be like. And we can't allow, you know, people who are afraid, who are in political power, by the way, to try and put us in the shadows again, which is not going to happen. I know that I'm just one person, but I believe in us as a community, and I know that if we push, Portland's got a large trans district, and that's what I was thinking too when I was down there. We have got a large transgender district. Why can't we take one of these neighborhoods that maybe is running down and turn that into our district? Why can't we build a second district here in Portland? We've got a large enough community. If we unite in a grassroots kind of thing, grassroots kind of situation, and talk with City Hall, talk with the state if we have to. And build a district like that for us here. I know we can do it because I've seen the very best in our community being an active member for 10 years. I've seen the very best in us. And I know there are people who've been in the community a lot longer than I have, but I've seen the best of us and I know we could do it. And I don't mean to get preachy. I don't mean to get political. I'm so proud of what our community has been able to achieve just in the last 10 years, and in Oregon especially. And I think, and from what I saw from California, I know we could do that here too. And I was going to tell you, I was also at the Sampram, on top of being at City Hall, at top of being at the transgender district in San Francisco, I also went to the LGBTQ center at San Francisco, the San Francisco LGBTQ plus center, and they actually have the only city-run transgender office in that same building. It's a huge building, and it's a transgender-run office that helps people in terms of you know, finding work, finding housing, you know, regardless of what's going on, maybe going on economically right now. And I got a chance to meet the people that work at the center themselves. And it's wonderful, the opportunity that they're providing the community down there. And it's trans ran, and it's transgender ran. And, you know, I thought, you know, I can't remember if the Q, does the Q Center have something like that? I didn't know if the Q Center has a Pacific transgender office that also works with the city itself.
I don't think that the Q Center has an office that specifically works with the city, but I mean, I know that a lot of people who are involved in operations at the Q Center are definitely in communication with, you know, local people. I mean, the Q Center definitely has a significant influence over the kind of conversations that we have in the community that represent queer people. So, but I don't know if they have an official city person. That's a great point.
Well, I'd like to see that, because I was really amazed that the center in San Francisco has that. And I was also going to say, and you know, I know that there's a lot of optimism in my voice, but you know, just from my own experiences, I've been through rough times in my life, and I know the past 3 years especially have been hard on everybody. Everyone's felt the effects of what's going on. I know I have, and I'm assuming that all three of you have experienced the hardships that are going on right now with the pandemic and the economic situation and inflation. But I've been before I transitioned, I saw some really hard things. I went through some difficulties losing my mom when I was a teenager, not having my dad around, period. You know, dealing with a lot of people who were, when I was growing up in school and living in Eastern Oregon, by the way, which is being somebody who is struggling with their gender identity and also being on the autistic spectrum with a very politically liberal progressive mom. That was not easy growing up in my hometown, although I'm not saying that everybody was mean to me there. I do have some very close friends that are still there. But, you know...
Where did you grow up, Gigi?
I grew up in La Grande, Oregon. I am actually from northeastern Oregon. I was born in Idaho, but my parents were getting in the process of divorcing. And then my dad went off to prison. And I'm not... And he didn't... You know, he wasn't a horrible man, but I wasn't close with him. But, you know, it was pretty much my mom raised me as well as my grandmother and my aunt. So I was raised... You know, I was raised in a very strong, you know, independent kind of family where the women in my family really instilled the strongest qualities in me and made me feel like a proud woman. And that's why I am so politically devoted to fighting for equal rights and, you know, seeing, knowing that things can always be better. But, you know, I grew up in La Grande, and then I moved out here to Portland to go to Job Corps, to go to school, about a year after my mom died. And, you know, I struggled with addiction when it came to, you know, I struggled with addiction for years, and I've been sober for 6 years now. And I haven't drank in 4 years. This month is actually my 4-year mark, you know.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I had gone through a lot of surgeries, and that's kind of what, you know, trailed that off. But, you know, I overcame that, and, you know, I started transitioning about 10 years ago. But, you know, I've been through the hard time, and things were really difficult, but I was able to come through it, and, you know, with a sharper set of what was important, fighting for the community, putting all my energy into fighting for trans, our community in general, the transgender community, but also the LGBTQ community. And I really just feel for anybody who's not, you know, the very one upper 1% rich, you know, white, cis, straight community that runs that on that, you know, basically owns 90% of the economy, 90% of the wealth in this country. And, you know, I saw so many good things in San Francisco that can be done here, including, by the way, their healthcare system, because, you know, I was able to, I was there a day longer than I had planned on, and I take a certain medication every day for my treatment, my drug treatment, and I normally wouldn't have been able to get it anywhere else in the country, but I got it in San Francisco. The doctors in the ER were able to treat me just with my Medicare, and I was able to get my medication and go to the pharmacy and pay 4 cents to get my medication without any problems. And, you know, I'm seeing these progressive laws that help our community, help, you know, help them, they help to offer job opportunities, to provide safety, to provide protection for our community. And I see that, and I see our community here, and I know how amazing our community is. I've seen us in the hardest of moments, not just during the pandemic, but before then, with the, you know, LGBTQ equality law that we have here, that we passed, I think, over 13, 14, 15 years ago. I think it was 2007, 2008. And the reproductive health care law that we passed, which protects reproductive rights in this state, you know, and
it's all connected.
Right. And I saw our community really fight for those things. And not just our community, but, you know, our allies and the LGBTQ part of our, the LGBT, you know, the community in general, we fought for those things. We got those things. And I saw so much in San Francisco, and it emotionally touched me to my core, and I could see those things happening here. I see the three women who developed the transgender district there. I see City Hall and what it's done for the LGBT community, what it's done for poor people there, what it's done for everyone who's hurting. And I just see that hope. I see that light, and I know all of us here in Oregon, all of us in Portland are able to reach those things, and I know we can reach that. And forgive me for yammering on and on, but I saw so much good in San Francisco. I saw the district. I saw City Hall. I saw healthcare. I saw the center. I saw all of these things, and for somebody who's been through hardships myself and gotten through it, and seen all of you and all the wonderful things our community is capable of doing, I know we can reach it, and I have every belief in my heart we will reach those goals.
That's great, Gigi. This is a really good segue. Today is we're getting ready to celebrate Transgender Day of Visibility, which is coming up on March 31st. And we've been talking with Gigi Castle about her really wonderful experience going down to the transgender district in San Francisco and all of the ways that it inspired her. Why don't we segue for a few minutes now, and we'll talk with Sheila and with Nicolette, and also contribute a little bit about how we celebrate Transgender Day of Visibility and what it means to us to be visible and out, and what we celebrate about our transness, about our non-binary-ness, you know, the things that we really celebrate about our community, where we are too. So would you like to start, Nicolette?
Yeah, sure. So the meaning of Trans Day of Visibility, we've talked about this with Rachel on our show previously. It's a day to be happy about being trans, you know, and in contrast to Trans Day of Remembrance, we've also got a day to be happy and be proud of who we are. And it's so important in this climate when we've got so many people telling us to not be proud of who we are, to be ashamed of who we are, to go back in the closet and pretend to be cis. So many of us have had to fight to be who we are, fight to be our authentic selves. And I know I spent most of my life trying to convince myself that I was just a cis girl when I knew deep down that I wasn't. And when I finally told the people around me that I was actually non-binary, it was like I felt this weight get lifted from my chest. Like I felt like I was free. And that's the kind of feeling I want to encourage other trans people to feel. The more we are out, the more we're proud of ourselves, the more we encourage other trans people to come out and feel proud of themselves too. And the more we empower ourselves, the more we move towards a future and a society where we are accepted and we are normalized and we can just be ourselves.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing that, Nicolette. What about you, Sheila? Would you like to share a little bit about what you're maybe thinking about talking about for Transgender Day of Visibility?
Yes, I do. And what I'd like to do is kind of do a little classroom lecture here for just a second on the idea of how what visibility means, and that the struggle for visibility isn't something confined to any individual group of people. To some extent, when a country has been colonized for years and years and years, there actually has to be a rebirth of the primary culture. So places like India that were under British rule for so long actually had to rediscover themselves after the power of the overarching British Empire fell away in the 1940s. And this idea of rediscovery is somewhat of the psychological process that every transgender person goes through. And it's not a momentary thing. It's something that takes place over time, and it has varying degrees of safety. I always hit the safety aspect because this is how we prevent ourselves from being wounded or even physically assaulted. We have to be aware that visibility is something that is primarily a matter of self-realization. The journey is actually within, and it's also a communal thing. It's not something we do by ourselves. One of the functions of any community is to develop a metaphor that explains what their experience is so that when we talk about it, it makes sense to other people. They have to have a bridgehead to try to understand our experience. And that's where empathy comes from, is that telling our stories is the way that people recognize things in themselves, because all of us, to some extent, are exiles. We all go through periods of our lives where we're very alone, or where we are kind of in the process of searching, and we're in the process of border crossing. So this is what I mean by metaphors, the idea of what is a border, what does it mean? One of the things in the book I'm reading right now talks about the idea that no sexual orientation can be understood without understanding its opposite. So one of the things that I think is very important for cisgender people to do is ask themselves why they are so afraid of us. What is it that, particularly if they assume that cisgender is so natural that someone should not even question it, the idea that they keep putting forward is only an ideology, some alien belief structure, some quote wokeness is menacing the way the world ought to be, forgetting that the world manages just fine without being indoctrinated into being cisgender. Doesn't have to happen, does it? So they don't need to be so afraid of us, but what the reason that they do feel this fear is because the idea of an alternative calls into question their own certainty. And so the thing that I think is important for us is to be gentle with them in a way, but on the other hand, there has to be an edginess. There has to be a rebellion. If there isn't rebellion, there's no self-definition. If there's no self-definition, there's no community. And this is what happens with any people in the struggle, basically, for social space. And that's what you're talking about when you're talking about a special gay district, is we're talking about allotting social space where it's okay to be out and it's normative to be out. So the question is, how do we take the overarching world, the rest of the world that we have to live in when we're not in a circumscribed area, and how do we make that land that we can reoccupy. It's a strange paradox, but when India was discovering its nationhood, what they were actually doing is reoccupying their own nation where they'd always lived. So that's essentially what we're doing. We're saying we don't want to live a life so circumscribed that we can't occupy our life. And occupying a life means the ability to cross borders in safety and not to be pushed back. So this is what we mean when we speak about metaphors, is that we find ways to take our experience and build bridgeheads to experiences in other people.
Thank you. You're listening to the Transgender Day of Visibility show here on Transpositive. So if it's okay, I'll share a little bit about my experience too. So for me, Transgender Day of Visibility, it's something that I started hearing about, oh, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago. I know that Rachel started it further back than that. I can't remember exactly when, but it's really interesting because Transgender Day of Visibility started in a way because of the success of Transgender Day of Remembrance. And it's not to say that Transgender Day of Remembrance is a success, but Transgender Day of Remembrance has become an institution, like it's become a ritual in and of itself within the transgender community. And we've had both the founder of Transgender Day of Visibility and the founder of Transgender Day of Remembrance on the show. So we've had a chance to hear them both talk about it. Transgender Day of Remembrance started as a way of, you know, trying to remember a trans woman who was murdered. And Transgender Day of Visibility started by someone who felt like Transgender Day of Remembrance shouldn't be the only day that we acknowledge transgender people. You know, it's interesting though, because we go back and forth between talking about both. I mean, even here in the show, we've talked about Nikki Kuhnhausen. You know, we've had advocates for Nikki Kuhnhausen on the show. We've had Nikki Kuhnhausen's relatives on the show. We've talked about the trial when it was going on. We talked about the conviction, the successful conviction of this person who murdered a transgender teenager right in our neighborhood. We remembered other transgender people who have been murdered here in Portland. And we also celebrate transgender people who do amazing things, like, you know, like Mickey, who's written several plays. And we've had her on the show. I mean, every 2 weeks we have on amazing transgender people who have done all sorts of things. I don't know if you know Gigi, but we had on Susan. Susan wrote that book on the Compton cafeteria riots, and did like, you know, a lot of the groundbreaking work. I mean, there's been a lot of scholarship on the Compton cafeteria riots, but what Susan did was she kind of elevated a little bit through her skills as an academic, and helped to produce that documentary that was shown on PBS and got a lot of viewings. So, you know, I mean, we've had over the years here on Transpositive, I mean, we've had so many amazing transgender advocates on the show who, you know, have all, like, each one of them is a very visible person. And all of the people who are on this collective, we have 15 people who have been members of the Transpositive Collective over the last number of years that we've had the show. And each one of them has been really visible. And the people who, this Transpositive kind of started out of the success of the first Trans Pride March here in Portland, 2014. And actually, that wasn't the first one. I need to get my history right. That wasn't the first one, but that was a new incarnation of the Trans March that had happened previously. And Transpositive kind of started out of both myself and Jean wanting to get a show at KBOO to kind of cover the transgender community. So, you know, and there's so many ways that people in Portland show their transgender visibility. I mean, there's just, if you go down to the Q Center, there's so many ways that you can plug in. I mean, there's all kinds of transgender stuff going on. there's transgender stuff that's happening outside of the Q Center. There's transgender things on Meetup. You know, there's transgender people advocating for our rights at City Hall. And, you know, there's every, you know, all the time there's the transgender choir. We've had them on the show. I can't remember their name right now. You're in the transgender choir, Nicolette.
Yes, I am. So the choir we've had on the show is currently called Accord. They were Accord, called, yeah. But now they're called Accord. And there's also Transpose, which is the other trans choir that is connected to Accord.
Yeah, there's so much trans visibility happening in Portland. And, you know, we all kind of meet magically too. Like Sheila and I met, we met on the beach. We just happened to randomly meet on the beach out on the Oregon coast, and Sheila's written all these books. What's that book you wrote? What's your most recent book, Sheila, that you're writing about your transgender experience?
Well, the one that I'm most pleased about, and it's going to have a new cover starting in about a month. But it's available right now also. It's a book of short stories, and some of it has transgender characters in it. And it's called Auguries of Desolation. And the title is meant to be edgy and catchy. And augury was the way that ancient people told what the future, and so an augury in some ways is like fortune telling. So it's Auguries of Desolation, and it's up on Amazon. And one of the things that you'll note in the characters is that they're caught in a world that is changing rapidly. And I explained that in the introduction to the book, is that the book is about when hard times are coming, or we're moving into stormy waters, whether it's that stage of our life or whether it's that condition of our life by being transgender, is how do people meet those challenges. But they're short stories, and there's 13 of them, and then some questions and answers in the back about what got you into writing and things like that. So it's by Blue Forge Press is the publisher, and you all might enjoy that.
Yeah, so I mean, there's just so many different ways that people show their trans pride and their trans visibility here in Portland. And now we have another story to add to our set of stories, because Gigi's come and shared with us, you know, her really amazing experience going down to San Francisco and seeing how we could model building transgender community based on what you've seen in San Francisco.
Well, thank you for allowing me to be on here. And also, you know, the wonderful thing is that you and I connected on the we met on the Portland Transgender Community Facebook group, and which, you know, people somebody who has been on it asked me, you know, that I found the group. And it's like, I'm always kind of embarrassed to share credit. I'm always embarrassed to take credit. I always want to share it. But it's like, I said, about 9 years ago, when I first started transitioning, I was looking on social media. There's got to be a social media group for transgender people in Portland or in the surrounding area, but I couldn't find any. So I worked with somebody, and, you know, I thought, well, why don't we just create one? And we used to have when we were first starting it off, we used to have monthly meetings, and that was the early part of it. But now we have at this point, when I checked it last, we have 2,600 members on the group. And it's not just, you know, members of our, not just transgender people, but it's parents of transgender children who need help or want to connect with their kids. And it's sharing ideas, helping each other. Here's a doctor that can help. And here's a great therapist. And do you need help going to the grocery store, or do you need just a friend that you can talk to? And that's what the community has been about. And that's probably, to my dying day, that will be one of my most proudest achievements. And I'm glad that we've been able to make each other visible there. And I'm looking at this Harvey Milk supervisor bypin. I got at the original camera shop that Harvey Milk used to work at, and it's an art. It's an art stump. It's an art gallery, funded by funded for queer artists. And the thing that made me so the thing that I was listening earlier, and I thought about it. It's like, well, Harvey said when he was first running for supervisor that the best way to defeat Proposition 6 was which would, you know, have fired all gay teachers and anybody who helped, anybody supported them. He encouraged everybody to come out and be visible. And if their family members and their friends saw it, they'd be less likely to be so hateful towards them. And I think to myself, that's one of the wonderful things about being visible now. We're more visible than we were 10 years ago. And yes, we're still dealing with backlash, but things are definitely, there's definitely more, I've seen more support than backlash, you know, in this area. It's not like it's not there, but I've definitely seen that visibility and being visible to each other and talking and sharing what we're going through, you know, other people. And I think that's kind of it's helping. It's a long process, but we're getting there. And that's the wonderful thing about visibility.
Well, this has been a really great show. We've just got a couple of minutes left, but I mean, it's just, it's been so great. Today's our Transgender Day of Visibility show. And Transgender Day of Visibility is March 31st. It's a day that was started by Rachel Crandall Crocker as a way of raising awareness about transgender people in a really positive way. And now it's celebrated all around the world. It's a big international day of celebration, and there's going to be stuff going on here in Portland. I'm pretty sure you can even get on social media and take a look at some places like maybe the Portland Transgender Network or Transgender Oregon or LGBTQ Portland, and you'll find out a lot about what's going on for Transgender Day Visibility here in Portland. And we just all wanted to kind of share our stories and talk about our transgender pride. And it's been so great having you on, Gigi. I hope that you'll, you know, show up for as many shows as you want to, because your voice is really an important part of all of our transgender voices.
Thank you. And thank you to everybody for having me on. I really appreciated sharing this. You were all so gentle to me, because I'm not used to giving a lot of interviews. So I wanted to make sure that I was, you know, confident in my voice, and just happy to share and be with amazing people, because all of you are. And, you know, thank goodness for visibility, and thank you for having me here. I hope I didn't go yammer too long.
Oh, this has been great. Thank you so much for having you on. Let's go around and we'll kind of do a checkout. Everybody can say whatever they'd like to close the show. My name is Emma. I use she and her pronouns, and I'm just so grateful for Trans Positive and for all the people over all the years who have been on the guests. We've literally had hundreds of people on this show, and I'm just so grateful for every one of them. I'm Nicolette.
Hi, I'm Nicolette. I use they, them pronouns, and I just want to encourage all the trans and non-binary people who are listening, never feel ashamed of who you are. Always be proud to be yourself. And the more you are visible, the more you encourage other people who are invisible to become visible. Thank you, everyone, for being here tonight.
Thank you, Nicolette. And Sheila?
Yes, I want to mention how important it is. Part of visibility is finding out what safe space means. We are finding friends in all kinds of quarters. And it's because we are of you, we are of you. We're not, and again, not aliens. That's so important. And that's what we're all trying to do. We're all trying to survive and prosper as best we can. So I wish us all good luck on this day, and nice to be with all of you tonight.
Thank you. And Gigi?
I just want to make sure that you can still hear me. My headphones are having an issue. My name is Gigi. My pronouns are she, her. And, you know, if I had one last word about visibility, our Transgender Day of Visibility, be visible. Be out, hold optimism in your heart, and know that united as we can be, on the dump. Our future is only getting more wonderful, and we can get to where we want to be as a community together.
Great, thank you. You've been listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. Thanks a lot. We'll see you next week.
Thank you. Have a good night.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Lady Sings the Blues, a tribute to Billie Holiday 2023, on Saturday, April 8th, from 8 p.m. to 10:45 p.m. at the Alberta Rose Theater in Portland. The 16th annual Billie Holiday Tribute brings together musicians of many genres to pay tribute to influential jazz singer and songwriter Billie Holiday. Performances feature Marsha Hocker, LaRonda Steele, Arietta Ward, and more. Again, that's the 16th annual Billie Holiday Tribute Night.